Hey, welcome to Angelarium Update, the podcast where me, Pete Moorbacher, talks about what's happening in Angelarium. I'm joined by
me, Elaine Ryan, and I also talk about stuff that's happening around conventions and in the community.
Yeah, for Angelarium.
For Angelarium.
Yeah, we're going to talk about some community questions and then what's been going on recently, and also talk about where we're going to be and what's happening. So let's jump right into it. We got some community questions.
Woo-woo! We've got this great question from Gross Art that I felt like was going to be right in Peter's wheelhouse, so I'll get right to it. He goes, or they go, I'm sorry, I'm not sure. They go, hey, Elaine, question for Pete. What made him start Angelarium, or just the start of creating it? Basically, they're trying to figure out what they'd like to do with their own work, and since they've only been drawing for a few years, they haven't quite found that thing that they really love.
Yeah. This is something I talk to people about all the time. And mm-hmm. so this is a topic I have a lot of passion for. The start of Angelarium was just kind of incidental. I was in college and a friend of mine was doing a series where she was getting people to illustrate a bunch of different characters. This was like a thing back on DeviantArt in the time where someone would say like, oh, I'm creating a race and the race all has tails, and each tail is a different color based off which zodiac sign they are or whatever, right? And so like you pick, you know, the sign, you know, you have 11 friends and they all do like one character from this race, and they all have like these traits based off of this set. So some people are doing like Egyptian gods or zodiacs, and this one friend is like, oh, I'm gonna do angels, and they share with me this book of angel names, and I'm like, oh, holy shit, these are incredible. Like just like the names of them alone was really inspiring to me, just to know that there was an angel of dust, an angel of memory. And it wasn't like, I'm going to create a project because this is the greatest idea. I just started drawing because I thought that sounded cool. And then it was so easy for me compared to, you know, I have an idea for something and I'm trying to execute on it, but I don't know what the right way to do it is. Like, with this, it was just, everything seemed obvious and simple. And so I made one, and then I made another, and I made another. And at a certain point, I was like, what if I made 12? And turning out, 12 of them was actually really easy. And it's just, it kept making sense as I did it. And everyone I've talked to who has an ongoing project, they have a very similar story of they just were making something, it clicked with them, they enjoyed it so much, they kept doing it over and over again. And the process of turning it into a project was really more of a matter of editing, just choosing to accept some pieces as an official part of the canon and separating that out from the rest of their body of work. And some of it even included taking old pieces that were created just randomly as personal pieces and sort of folding them in because they matched the visual design and themes. And I've done that at different points with Angelarium too, where pieces that were made just randomly ended up getting a name. That's only happened a couple of times, and those aren't part of the main collection so much anymore. But the whole thing just sort of spawned out of me finding something that came really naturally. So when people ask me this question, the big emphasis I want to put on it is that you don't get to choose what is going to be your calling or a project that you want to spend 10 years on. You don't get to come up with the best idea or pick 10 ideas, then lay 10 ideas out and then pick which is the best one to be a project that you're going to work on an ongoing basis. The project really picks you, and you don't get a decision, you don't get a vote. And that often leads people to, you know, relate to this idea of a muse, that some sort of sentient being that exists outside of them that makes choices that they don't get to, they get to maybe have a relationship with, but they don't get to choose where those choices, you know, they don't get to choose what that other figure is like. And, you know, I think that there's biological reasons why we have that experience. And I think that in my own case, like, I was really happy to have found something so early in my life so that now, still being young, I'm able to work on a big project on an ongoing basis without having to like having to work for 30 years. But like, if for anybody who's wanting to do that, my big recommendation is just to make lots of work and you just wait, because you'll know when it happens. And if you don't have something, I wouldn't force it. I wouldn't get hung up on it. this isn't the way that most people's art careers go, but when you have something like that, I try to be a cheerleader for it. I try to encourage people to invest in it because I think that there's a lot of personal satisfaction to be gained, and potentially even, career success to be gained from constantly investing in an independent personal project like that. So if you're hearing me talk about it and you're thinking to yourself, I think I know what that is, I would say that you probably don't have it yet. But if there's something that has just always been with you and is always obvious and you just can't help but be constantly working on it, I would say that even if you don't think it is like a project like that, I think it is. Like it should just be a obvious natural extension of the way you spend your time making art.
Like it's just come, it's this weird passion project that seems to come significantly easier.
Yeah,
Yeah,
the
like
main indicator is
it's.
how obvious and easy it is. Sometimes to the point that people will write them off because I say like, "Well, I've got this thing that I do, but I don't think it's a real thing because it's just, it's kind of dumb and obvious and easy." I go like, "No, that's it. That's the one. Shut up
That's,
about the
yeah.
other idea. I don't want to hear about your challenging thing that you're gonna grow into. No,
No, don't grow into it.
it's just gonna be
Sit.
you."
Don't try to break in those shoes. Let's
Yeah,
just
yeah.
comfy ones.
It's like you're not gonna you don't want to buy an expensive piece of clothing because it's you hope that you're going to be the kind of person that wears this, exotic fancy piece of clothing. You want to wear something that matches your style. You want to, everything in your life should be an extension of what you really want and not what you are hoping that you would be. And when it comes to things like, fashion or hair or whatever, like those are trivial and they change. With art, it's a bigger, more personal investment because there's so much time involved. So it's really important that you're very honest with yourself when you're working on something like that.
This and just like overall honesty for
Yeah.
yourself.
Yeah.
It's just that's the thing. That's what it
Very important. All right.
all right.
This is
Yeah.
going to come up again and again in different ways. So I could keep going on it, but I'm just going to wait for the conversation to move forward. More questions that
Oh.
come in down the line. See what else
All
we
right.
got.
So I'm gonna move to Avi's question. Avi, we'll see you in 2 days.
See
Woo!
ya. See you soon, Abby.
How does the Angelarium team determine how many limited edition prints go to cons as well as other prints? Do you look at numbers of attending persons or you just take a random guess?
Oh,
So,
well, this is going to be your job soon, Elaine, because
yeah,
you're the one
so
who's going to decide how much inventory is going to places.
that's right.
Since I've done it all of the shows up to this point, what ends up happening is so the main thing is the open edition prints, and those I've been selling open edition prints at shows for 15 years. For a while I was trying to bring enough where I was going to sell out of everything I brought, and at a certain point, I realized that was dumb because when I sold out of a print, then the next person who wanted to buy one, I just lost a sale with them. So I try to bring enough so that I'm going to sell 90%. The ideal is if I printed 100 copies, I would sell 99 of them. And so I would never run out of anything, but I would also sell almost all of what I brought. And so I'd use past sales data to try to get to what that number is going to be. I have different amounts that I stock in sort of even quantities, like, breaking down into 20s, like pieces that I'm experimenting with, or I think I want to include as part of a collection, but I don't think will be very popular. I'll bring like 20 copies of well, pieces that I know are consistent sellers and are very hot and sell a lot. I'll bring 100 copies of, and they'll just sort of range between there. And at the end of the show, I do my inventory to find out how many of each sold through. And so I then use that as a basis for figuring out at what point, like how much I need to restock. I can look at some statistics about a show to determine whether or not I think it's going to be a higher or lower sales volume overall. But also because these prints are going to move from show to show, it's not important to me to. It's more of a problem if I underestimate than overestimate. So that I try to. If I'm about to go into a period of time where I have a number of shows in a row, I'll try to stock double what I think might be the maximum amount of sales for that print, which is still ends up being a little conservative because after, a couple of months, I find myself having to buy back in and restock again for something that I'm going to be using all year. It might even make more sense for me to make larger choices about, if something's going to be around for an entire year, stock up. Instead of 100 copies of my bestsellers, maybe 500 copies, because that's going to travel to, 20 different. If you're going to do 20 dates in a year, which we're not doing that next year, but maybe sometime down the line, it might make sense to just buy in stock 500 copies of something is going to be there all year, which is like a situation I don't think is very common. So that's not like,
Hey, Peter,
it's
you're
not
reading my
actionable.
mind.
Yeah. It's not an actionable piece of advice that I'm saying go buy 500 of everything. But as like looking behind the curtain, that's kind of where our head is at right now. With limited editions, what happens is those end up being brought because they're twice as large and they work really well as display items to hang in the back of the booth or to make the booth seem larger and more intimidating at a distance. So I bring a handful of those, and I can only bring the ones that aren't sold out. So they tend to actually be my less popular pieces or the ones that are brand new. And so I bring maximum of 5 copies of each of those, and then those are designed to try to sell out because it's an outlet for me to find customers for those when they're not finding customers on the website. So some of the ones that have been in the store for a long time, bringing 5 copies of them to a show and maybe selling through 3 of them is like a way that I'm reducing that stock back down to 0 so I can try to sell through all the new ones that come out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, that's.
So, first question, all very much about creativity and insight. The second one, all about business and like the pulling the curtain back on the operations of this damn thing. So, what else we got? You gotta thread the needle with the third one here?
Well, yeah, absolutely. That's why I went to Obvious before Truman's. So, Truman Black asks, first question. So this is going to be a little bit more at the angelic lore is where I'm headed with this one.
Hit me. Let's do this.
I know, right? They're blending it
We
together.
finally have an outlet. Like, I'm so excited for this podcast because I finally have an outlet to be able to talk about this that's not in front of 5 people. Oh,
and people that actually care. We love you guys.
my God, I'm so happy to be able that you guys like this because I think about it all the time.
It's really satisfying. Okay, so Truman Black, our lovely friend from Dragon Con, asks, first question, the poem for Amoros, what does it mean?
That up. What did I even write for Amoros?
I'll pull it up too. I can read it out loud.
Are we gonna do a live poetry reading here?
Let's do a live poetry reading. You can only snap in response.
Oh, I'm gonna snap after you're done reading it.
Okay, yeah. All right, so. The stone carver sits upon dusty throne, his hands strong from labors past. The world turns without him, lost to time, his youth, his comfort, his mind. And yet the stone remembers all, each offense recorded blow by blow. The tale of a young man lost in a world that turned without him, who rested his strong hand upon a dusty throne. Oh, I love that. Poem a lot, actually.
I really like this poem. I didn't think I wrote it. I need to check whether or not it was Eli or other guy. God, bad with, I'm not
Oh,
remembering right now
you're
who.
awful.
I'm awful. James
You're
Pianca did a bunch of poems. And like we were talking about, this is going into technical stuff before it's going into creative stuff. We had talked about accreditation, and I was like, no, I'm gonna have it all be mysterious. Like, well, the credits will be built into like on the, if it's going in the deck, it'll be in the deck box, and if it's going in the book, it'll be in the book, and if it's on the website, it'll be in the about section. But now I'm like reading through this, and I'm like, oh, I need to. I don't care if it like diminishes like the sort of mysterious like voice of like where does this stuff come from. I need to add credits for every piece of content, like
You
who it
do.
comes from. If it doesn't have a credit, it should be mine, because it would be assumed to be mine otherwise. And this is the first time where it's dawning on me how important it is that I do that, and how much my past philosophy about this has been wrong.
Yep.
So, I need to find out who's the author of that and put it on the website.
Anyway, let's go into
Yes.
the meaning of that.
The I mean, themes. When I was working with any of the writers, we were talking about the themes of what the pieces are about, and this is really about the same core themes as Amoros, which is about the idea that like over time, like we as people like unravel, and that are, we create these things that we want to outlive us, but they have to outlive us because like we over time like become older and fall away into the past. And Armoros is sort of about unwinding, like how a person loses themselves and starts to lose track of like who they are and where they are, and like this creation of even a creation set in stone begins to erode away, and slowly like everything gets lost to time eventually. And the character of Armoros is both the figure that helps put these powerful seals into stone to make them real, but then when things go bad and they need to, and it behooves the Watchers to unmake them, he's also the one that breaks them. So it's like Armoros as a figure represents both the creation of things, but also the undoer of those creations, and the way that we can be our own undoing at times. I think, like, I want to go into more specifics, but I also just want to write. Like, this is a point in the book where, as I'm talking about removing content and editing stuff, Armoros is one of those points where I want to do just right, because I think that because his story is so important to the meta story of the Watchers and what they represent. So I don't want to overstate something that could potentially like be said better in the book, because I want the book to really speak to this stuff as like the authoritative
I
voice.
just.
And I need to take, a better look at like where all the content came from, so that all of that is, people understand where the authorship comes from on this stuff too. Because it's like, it's funny that in the moment, the character that's supposed to be speaking about like, these deeds that are supposed to be written in stone forever are being forgotten, that I've forgotten who the author of the poem is. So ironic, it
So
hurts. I'm really frustrated with myself right now.
it's
Oh my
okay, Peter.
God.
It's nothing that can't be fixed
This ended up being
relatively
more honest than I think that I planned for. And I'm shouting into the mic, and now it's coming up as an echo on my side. It's horrible.
And just as a quick clarification to everyone on the podcast, Armoros is the Angel of Undoing. If you wanted to go look up that pretty kind of rougy picture.
Yeah. I'm trying to get some alternate art. Okay, so I'm gonna go into some stuff that I'm working on, and like this is
Oh
a
wait, let's
perfect pivot
go.
point. Oh, we got another one.
We've got one more. Yeah, second question.
Yeah.
So it the second question from Truman is: it's no secret that Tamiel is my favorite piece on Angelarian, and we put the background for the painting Calcabio. So, is there what was the backstory for the painting Tamiel, or would you like us to move that for next week?
The question that extends to, and maybe Ananiel if it's too much. I have stuff to say about both of them, but as far as having more to say, I have more to say about Ananiel, and Ananiel is one of my favorite ones to talk about, so I want to talk about that one.
Okay, so Truman, you're gonna get a
You're gonna get
Naniel.
Ananiel. Yeah. I'm
You're
glad you gave
getting
me two to choose from, because one of these is one of my favorites to
fine.
talk about. Ananiel, I really like. Ananiel was interesting because it was one of those pieces that, like, and Sithariel is the same way. I'll talk about that some other future week. But the circumstances surrounding my life during the painting ended up mimicking the content of the painting. I originally, like, I knew I wanted to make something about storms, and I was associated with like the storms at sea. And shipwrecks and maritime imagery. And so Ananiel is sort of secretly a mermaid. Like, I didn't show the fishtail explicitly, but Ananiel is not able to really exist much on land. Ananiel like lives in the ocean and has like more fishy parts that are not visible inside the painting. And then Ananiel is sort of in this piece summoning the a storm, but is also kind of getting tossed around by it at the same time, and is being lashed to these posts to try to like hold himself from being washed away. The main theme of it, and that's not so precious. The fiction of this is not so precious. The main point of it is really about there was a time where I was starting a lot of shit on the internet, and I realized that it had kind of got. I wanted to get something done, but my way of getting it done had caused a lot of trouble, and that trouble was getting away from me. I had started something that I didn't have the capacity to stop, and that was really what I wanted to make this about. And it really wasn't about, Facebook drama. It was really about those times in our lives where we put something in motion because we want to get something done, and then we don't have the ability to stop it anymore. And in that way, it's also about addiction and the ways in which we get addicted to things where we want to get the results, but then we can't take it out of motion anymore. And it's, when I talk about this piece in shorthand at conventions, Western, well, what's this one about? I say, it's about starting something that you can't stop. And when it's at its core, it really is a theme that's that broad. And I see people have a really strong reaction to that because. And I, for myself, I respond really strongly to those themes too, because there's these moments in my life where I know that I started something and I just, even when I wanted it to end, I couldn't make it end anymore. And that's really what's happening in this piece, is it's like Ananila is starting the storm, but at the same time is also the victim of it. And like, I was trying to find what the emotional honesty of this piece was while it was really late in the process. And so there was some really late in the process changes to like the pose and the composition, because at first it was really more shallow, more about a simple, just like the angel about, literal storms. But as I started to realize how it tied back to my own experiences about what it would be like to summon a storm and then not being able to stop that storm, like that's when all of the key emotive parts of this painting got introduced to it on the backdrop of simple things like the clouds or the waves. Like those are easy, but like it's the gesture of that forward arm that's reaching upwards, and the way it contrasts with the rest of the figure. Like that is the way he's sort of looking longingly upwards, but has the drape covering his face. Like that stuff all came together really late in the painting, because that was the point where I understood what it was about. And it's those sorts of creative experiences that make me now reach for a deeper meaning in the piece earlier on, because it's really scary to get three quarters of the way through a painting and not really feel like you have a sense on what the painting is about, because then you need to like you're going to need to make changes if you want it to be more about something more than clouds and waves and rocks. And when that's decided on earlier on, it is so much easier to get a clear picture on what choices need to get made and what choices are succeeding from a creative standpoint. So this was a big learning lesson for me in that respect as well. So like both the I felt like I got a lot from it, both in terms of it being about something I cared about, but also, the process of bringing those things to life and like how important it is to have those the understanding of what the piece means prior to spending so much time with it. Like that was so that I have a lot of strong feelings about this. That, and I also was trying to do Twitch streaming in the middle of this one, and it taught me, hey, I hate Twitch streaming, because that sort of focus on the emotional honesty of it is very hard. It's very hard for me to be that present when I'm also talking to an audience live. I'd rather finish the painting and then talk about it later when I have my head totally around the thing. And so this was also the piece that taught me, hey, I'm not going to do Twitch streaming to share things. That's why all of the time lapses are like pre-recorded. So
I
yeah,
feel like
lots here.
I feel like I can hear Miss Fi already going, Mermaid!
And
I love her
Miss
for
Fi's like, oh yeah, mermaids. Yeah,
it.
secret. Ananiel's the secret mermaid.
I love that a lot.
Yeah.
And I also really enjoy the thematics behind the painting.
Cool.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Don't worry, Truman. We'll get you your Tamiel
Oh yeah, Tamiel coming up. We're gonna
definition.
work through him
Don't worry.
eventually. The
Yeah.
what I was gonna say is like related to Armorose is that right now I'm working with a lot of artists to get some alternate art done for the Book of Watchers, and I was just talking with Alan Williams, an artist who I love his work
Oh
a lot.
my
And
God. That's
he, I, we've, he's been saying he's gonna do a piece for Armoros for a while, and I'm like riding him on it. And like, I was especially supposed to bother him and his wife Vicky, who does a lot of like administration for him, about getting this piece done after AluxCon, which I just got back from AluxCon, which then transitions into I got to hang
Yeah, I was
out
going
with
to ask
Sparta
you about.
Dog, who
Yeah.
you were like, oh my god, you met Sparta. I was like, yes, we got a photo. Like, it was on his phone, but I also got a photo on my phone because I was like, I don't want to worry about whether or not this photo is going to get transferred on my own photo so I can post it in Discord. And like, there was all these questions about how tall I was. I think Sparta can officially attest that I'm much taller than him. He's very short, so
Wig
you can
bluff.
see it in, you can see it in the you can see it in the photo we took together. There's proof of how tall I am. It's like not exceptionally tall or short, but yeah, that was like that was a big day. Like that was like a big day of chat. Like people were like, "How tall is Pete? Did you see him?" And like I didn't feel like there was nothing I could say online to sway people's opinions because they were painting this like very strong picture in their head. A lot of it.
I kind of loved the whole Pete is
Mystique.
really short and I am an Amazonian woman when it is quite opposite.
That was. You're not opposite. You are normal height for a
No,
lady.
I'm 5'3". I just have a really big personality.
Oh, and you also wear big shoes sometimes, I think. That might also be
Yeah,
part of it.
that's true too. I do like strutting around in crazy heels. But speaking of
Oh
AlexCon,
yeah, is there more Luxcon stuff to talk about? I did a talk there.
tell me more there. Tell me more about it because I didn't hear anything about it yet.
Yeah, so I don't show work at a LuxCon. I just go there and chit chat with people. And I did a talk along with my friend Sam Flegel, who we do a show called One Fantastic Week together. We record an episode every week. We talk about the sort of intersection of art and business. And I want to get more creative people comfortable with tools like Patreon and Kickstarter because I want the success of Angelarium to help inspire other people to go and make their own projects and have their own successes with them, because I think that the world's a better place when people are able to have their art funded and they're able to have their best art supported instead of having to sell it away to companies to be able to, you know, sell as a matter of, you know, marketing. Like, I want people to make art for art's sake, and I want that art to be supported by the people who love it. So I go there to spread that message. And I got to talk with a bunch of creators who either were already doing that, who wanted support and knowledge. And then I got to meet creators who didn't know that that was a thing. And I got to get them excited about the idea that they didn't need a publisher in order to make their project exist. There were ways of bringing it to the world without having to get approval from gatekeepers, but they could find the people who loved their work and go to them to make the thing come into the world. And so as a
On that note,
I was willing to invest my time and my money in order to go there and do that, even though I wasn't selling anything. So it was just, also it was a lot of fun. I got to party a lot with a lot of cool people because AluxCon is like the epicenter for seeing awesome painting and meeting lots of artists. If you guys are interested in that kind of thing, I would put AluxCon on the calendar for next year for sure.
yeah, it's I'm pretty, yeah.
Yeah.
I do want to say just real quickly, well, I haven't been to a Lexicon, but I do want to say really quickly, like, it's really incredible that you guys support us on Patreon. Like, it's a huge deal and
Yeah.
thank you. Like, I don't know, like, you're the reason why things like this get to continue to happen where and like excitement towards these stories is what.
Even bigger than that. Even
Yeah,
bigger than that.
it's so crazy.
The so Angelarium exists the way it does because of your support on Patreon. But also, because you're supporting me on Patreon in this way, I can tell you I have a list of creators who are directly quoting the success of Angelarium is the reason why they are investing in their own projects. The support you're giving Angelarium is causing other creators to venture forward and put great things in the world. Like, you may be happy that Angelarium exists because of your patronage, but I'm happy not just because my project is supported, but because you guys are very directly, and even though there's not that many of you, you're having this outsized impact on the industry as a whole, where artists who felt trapped by the commercial nature of their work are finding new liberation outside of the standard publishing model, thanks to the support that you've shown me. And that is something really, really incredible that I want to talk about more in the future, because I think that the world of art, especially illustration, has the capacity to change as a result of the support that Angelarium fans have shown this project. So,
Just for fun, as a direct connection,
yeah.
the reason why I started freelancing 3 years ago is because of your Patreon.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah,
I didn't
so
even know that.
I know, I don't think I ever told you that. But I
But
was like,
if you guys
well,
want to
shit.
see a specific example of this and support it, my friend Tyler Walpole has his first book on Kickstarter right now. It's called Blood of Dragons Prelude. Blood of Dragons is a thing that Tyler has been thinking about and poking at for 10 years. And after seeing Angelarium succeed, he decided to tear down all his commercial work that he was bringing to shows and start to bring Blood of Dragons exclusively to conventions. And it has done well for him. And now he's kickstarting the first book, and it's doing really well on Kickstarter. And it's sort of a urban fantasy focused on shape-shifting dragons. Like, it's very interesting. It's very its own thing, and it's not the sort of thing that would come into the world unless a creator was bringing it there. It's also 100% fan supported. So and he told me, like, yep, this exists because Angelarium succeeded. And I'm like, holy shit. I've got to start talking about this more. Like, I've got to start bringing this out to more people. If I can make art I like exist in the world, like, by receiving payments from my fans, like, that is the biggest win-win I've ever heard of. Like, I want to grow this thing bigger now, not because I needed it to be bigger, but because I want to widen that door and blaze a bigger trail for all these other people who are looking to us right now. Because, man, to be able to open doors for people like that fills me with a kind of joy that really is unparalleled. And I really, if that could be more than if Angelarium is my legacy, if that's my legacy, like, that's what I'm aiming for right now, is to keep pushing that door open wider for everyone around me and
It's
finding new
really
ways of doing it.
exciting. Yeah.
Keep an eye out down the line, like, on that line. Like, if you start seeing me cross promoting with other campaigns, like other Patreon campaigns or talking about other Kickstarters, that is the reason why. It's because I want to see them succeed so that more people see those successes and more people jump in, because there's this rising tide effect that I think will happen as more people get used to supporting their favorite creators and seeing that there's a marketplace for it on places like Patreon and Kickstarter. So, yeah. That's also why I need to not screw up this book. I need people
Oh,
to be really
just
happy with it, yeah. So,
lay more pressure on yourself
no,
over
there's
there.
no more pressure that could be laid on me than is already on there. And if it's possible, I'm going to try to hide from it because it's already too much pressure. So,
Well,
we'll.
nope, just to get it done, and then you don't have to hide from it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're getting ready to leave for LA soon. Like, I got a couple of days to finish Sagittarius and get the release done for that, and also do a public release for Scorpio. And then I'm going to be on an airplane for LA, where I'm going to spend a couple of days with some friends. And then we're going to be at Stan Lee's LA Comic Con. And
We're going to be
yeah.
there. I'll be setting up that booth with you on Thursday. Woo-woo. And then it's going to Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It's supposed to be
Yeah.
like 1,000 people con. It's going to be really fun. They're apparently having, I don't know how people feel about them, but there's going to be like a free Black Eyed Peas concert on Saturday. It's going to be pretty wild.
All right. I don't
That's
know much about the Black Eyed Peas, but I guess cool. The yeah, before I can do that, I need to finish Sagittarius and I need to release Scorpio and I need to answer all my emails, because I have stuff in there about I'm getting sketches from Goni Montez for two new alternate Watcher pieces, and I'm also talking with Goni about fundraising for Puerto Rico, which we're going to be talking about more in depth next month for sure.
Yeah, I'm really excited about
Yeah,
that.
he has family on the island, and so one of the big hurdles that We're gonna, rather than doing a big sale, I've decided for certain I'm not gonna be doing the Red Wednesday like holiday sale this year. Instead, we're gonna organize something bigger where we're going to, instead of fundraising for me, we're gonna fundraise for somebody who actually needs the money. I wanna put together, we're gonna put together a fundraiser that the proceeds are gonna go towards helping people recover from Hurricane Irma on Puerto Rico.
We're
And
going to figure out how to get those generators down there. It's going to be
yeah,
really
we're and the first step towards that is Goni is going to be able to, because he has firsthand relationships with people who are living there right now, help us find out what people need and find out what are the best ways we can help. Because
yeah.
before we like raise any money, we want to know like what are we going to do to try to help and what are those goals going to be. And so
No,
we're going to talk about that.
we want to physically send these items over there. We don't want to
Yeah.
go through a charity where we don't know exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah,
So we're
we
like
want to be really
really,
directly involved, so.
really stubbornly. Yeah, we want to make sure that these people are absolutely getting help.
Yeah, and like we don't know, we're newbies at this, so
Yeah,
we're going
so.
to try to use Angelarium as a platform to signal boost some fundraising efforts. I'm going to be creating some special items for sale that are going to be extra expensive, but I'm not going to keep any of the money. It's going to all go towards
100%,
100% of the
including the
revenue.
manufacturing. So,
Yeah,
like,
so like
don't
I'm
like
gonna eat all
manufacturing
the,
stuff. Yeah.
yeah, I'll eat all the manufacturing costs on everything to be able to produce this stuff, and then I'll also just allow people to like give without having to get something in return and try to figure out how to best assemble and promote all that so that we can help people. Because if people are extra generous around holiday time, rather than give me an extra, some number of thousands of dollars, I would rather that we see how much can we help? Because I know how much I can boost my own sales during the same period of time in the year, and it's already a lot of money. But like, what if that amount was amplified because there was a cause behind it, and there was more communication around it, and there was something that was more exclusive and unique for it? Like that all could, I don't know what that number is, but it would make a significant difference for people out there. So we're gonna see what we can do with that. We don't have any specifics. Like, I've literally told you everything I know about what's happening. So as we get better at knowing what we want and it gets closer to being able to execute on it, we'll like get increasingly specific about our efforts to fundraise and help. And I don't know if I need to do anything like on the corporate side of stuff. Like, Angelarium is run through my personal my S Corp, and so like everything is done through a corporation which I own. It's a matter of personal liability, but how does that relate to charitable giving? Like, I don't fucking know. Elaine is going to be doing
It's
a
an
lot of research.
LLC, not, it's an LLC, right? Though
No,
not a.
it's an S Corp.
Oh, I didn't
Yeah,
realize that. My.
Moorbacher Art Limited is an S Corp,
Oh, okay.
and that encompasses my business and also my wife's business, and like Angelarium is sort of, I think, intellectual property is owned by Moorbacher Art Limited, which I own. So there's like a weird layer in between. And then what does that do for charitable giving, and how does that affect the way that money is done? I don't know. We'll find out. Like
We'll figure that out.
we're
That's not
learning.
a.
We want to learn that stuff because I
Absolutely.
want this to be a re I want charitable activities to be a regular part of what Angelarium does, even if it's just a yearly event. And to do that, we need to learn these things. And now that Elaine is working with me, I have an extra, a person to be able to do things like research and figure out like how the heck does this work? And I'm going to be talking with my accountant and stuff anyway around the end of the year to figure some other things out. So
Yeah, if
we'll figure it
anyone
out.
has any advice or suggestions, or has worked with
Oh,
charity before, my
yeah.
ears are so open because I really want to make sure this happens and comes
Yes.
to a really happy and solid, helpful end. So.
Let's get specific. If you have firsthand experience with running, operating or dealing with the administrative side of charitable giving for a corporation, email emissary@angelarium.net so that Elaine, that's Elaine's email for the project,
That's me, Neil.
that if you ever want to reach Elaine personally, related to anything, if you want to reach Elaine directly about anything related to Angelarium, you can email her at emissary@angelarium.net.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think we're coming to maybe the end. But If you guys have any questions, you're more than welcome to post them in the Discord chat itself, or you can continue to send me PMs. People have been sending me PMs instead of asking you on the main Discord channel. I don't keeping them secrets, but either way is fine. Or for the people that are only listening on the Patreon page, yeah, hit me up at emissary@angelarium.net. Yeah.
.com was taken.
I'm sorry. I didn't really
.com was taken. The
right.
Yeah, it was like, and it was, what happened is like it was taken by some Brazilian company, and then they weren't using it, and they let it lapse. I think it got snapped up by somebody, and that happened with the Tumblr account too, where like there was a person using it to post angel artwork. It was like surreal angel artwork, who apparently had seen me use this term that I invented like in the past, and then I asked them to get control of the Tumblr account, and then I found a old message from them months after they had abandoned it, and I went to go take it, and like it had been taken by squatters, and it has something like advertisements for betting on it. I'm like, fuck. I would have rather that there was just a blog that had a whole bunch of relevant content on it rather than betting. Just being owned by some squatters. And I contacted Tumblr because they're like, we have a no squatting policy. I was like, hey, there's a squatter here. It's really obvious. And they're like, you have a trademark? And I was like, well, the copyrights. Like, can I? So I need to like, if I want to like push people around on the internet, I need to like spend the money and the time to get the trademark registered. It's like more exhaustive and expensive than getting copyrights done. So one of these days I'll like make the investment and just go get the trademark and then like
after the book is finished,
push people off of squatter accounts, you know, using the muscle of the trademark. Once the books are done, I'll probably do something like that.
Yeah.
So. I think that's it. I'm really excited about all of the contributor artwork. I also got to talk with Samuel Araya, who I really, really wanted to do artwork for the Book of Watchers, and he said no to me months ago, and I asked him again now that things are ramping up again, and he said yes, and then we had a conversation about him doing some additional work, design work for the book that I had written off as being undoable and was getting cut. And then he's like pulled it off the cutting room floor, is bringing it back. And if that happens, I'll talk about it more, but I don't want to type something that's going to potentially get cut again. Is it already got cut once?
That's pretty exciting though. That sounds really good.
Yeah. And when I'm back from LA, I still have one more thing to do during the year. And that's my workshop in Nashville, where my friend Sam and I are doing a workshop about the intersection of art and business. It's 4 days on site where you get to hang out and talk with us about running one of these things. So if you're trying to build your own thing, keep an eye out for our workshop next year. The tickets are sold out this year. It's like 50 people, 50 attendees, and a whole bunch of staff. Elaine's going to be there too. I'm sneaking
around.
I'm
going to be there.
I want her to learn about this stuff from the people we hired as instructors, so that, because she's running all of the convention sales, so for next year. And when I'm going to claim that the book production is going to ramp up immediately starting after I get back from LA, but there I am going to then disappear for another week. This is why this book isn't done, because I am trying to get releases done, I'm trying to take care of business, and then I have to travel for a week, or I'm traveling for 2 weeks out of a month, and I'm like, next month will be fine. But I have failed to not book more stuff every month. And so I keep ending up going like, I'm about to start on it again. And then more stuff happens. But
we did say no to a December Grand Prix in Singapore, though.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
At least we didn't say no to one thing in December.
I have no other travel planned. And so I have one thing in November. And then I have no dates after that I am booked for. And I have no dates I intend to book for myself. Well into 2018, yeah.
All the other stuff, so he shouldn't have to do anything. That shit's going to get done. Don't worry.
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't that exciting? That's such a stress reliever.
It is, and that's why I believe I can actually get the book done soon. And that's why I believe that I'm going to start. You're going to start seeing two paintings a month out of me. And why I believe there's going to be more traditional work. Because those are the things that have been getting put off in favor of doing travel dates. And the travel dates have been instrumental into keeping like the money secure for the book production as the time has drifted forwards. But mm-hmm. with So to be able to have the time back without having to invest, but also be able to get the benefit of that stuff altogether, thanks to having you on, is changing that relationship. And that's why, we were trying to broach the conversation of like pledge caps and, how many pieces are coming out every month and how things are changing going forward. Because between you and Matt, like now, like I'm given back this freedom to be able to do these things. And it's exciting because now there's all these opportunities to do more stuff going
Yay,
forwards.
more stuff.
One more thing I want to tease, because this is definitely happening. I'm pretty sure the Book of Watchers is going to have a soundtrack that's going to ship with it.
Dun, dun,
Da
dun,
da da da. Yeah, you've heard some of the music. It's in the background of the YouTube videos. Thomas Ferkel and I are talking about stuff.
dun. That's
And
really cool.
I really want him to release a musical album with me, because he's got the first draft of all 20 tracks for the Book of Watchers soundtrack done.
It's like you can read the pages and be in that exact environment.
I am really, I've been loving how this stuff has been coming out. Obviously, I've been using it already. And I'm gonna be ramping up with that. Like, we've kind of been, he's been working, and I've been like not been super available to talk with him on DMs, but we have an email thread going that's potentially like that stuff being, an official release. Like, you can listen to a lot of it right now, but what I really want to do is tie it in so that we have an official soundtrack for the book is something that I kind of thought of as like a weird, odd, maybe someday dumb idea, send out a couple emails and then like agree that it's possible but never work on it. Like, it the fact that that is almost
Possible.
that's possible, like very, very possibly going to be done. And it's being done basically at perfect timing to go launch with the book is ridiculous. I feel so fortunate to have, and Thomas like got attached to this just because he's a fan and like making really great stuff. I also, oh God, I forgot the guy's name. I got a bunch of gifts at AluxCon. Sparta Dog gave me that original drawing of Samyaza that won the fan art contest. And I got to meet Sparta Dog. Did we mention that? Yeah.
Yeah, we did mention that.
Okay. Yeah. And then I got these boxes, and I'm gonna post photos of that on my Instagram, and I'm gonna see if I can dig up the credit for this box. I know the guy's name is Ray, but I wanna hope he put a card in here. Oh, he did. Oh, sweet. Yeah, the Ray Wisman, Crimson Eye Media. I'm gonna post pictures of this thing, especially in, like the Discord. You guys are gonna see my cool Angelarium box with a hole in it. My God, the fan community around this thing is absurdly amazing. I love you guys.
Yeah, I can hear the love.
Oh my
That
God. I really, no, it affects me. So, I'm like holding this box, I'm like cradling it. Yeah, you'll see pictures in a few minutes. Or you've seen them already, because it takes me a little bit to produce this podcast. And then we're done. That's all I had to say. Thanks, Elaine.
You're welcome, Peter. All right.
Let's go over the finances after we log off for this thing.
Yeah, sounds like a plan.
Get some bank feeds. All right.
All
Thanks,
right.
everyone,
Thanks to
and
y'all.
talk to you next week on the podcast. Bye-bye.